we think that there are at least 14 Patriot Movement-like candidates for office in Oregon, and probably half dozen or a dozen more who we're not aware of or not quite sure about. So there's a major move to run for office right now.
What does it mean if someone is part of the Oregon Patriot Movement? Can you define that as a movement?
First, most of these people, not all, but most of them are running inside the Republican Party. There's a move to take over, and I believe in a couple counties they really have. In Cripp County, for example, have taken over the county Republican Party. Patriot Movement is the successor to the militia movement, which of the 1990s, which itself was sort of a repetition of some earlier political trends, such as the Posse Comitatus movement in the 1970s. It's a radical right-wing movement. It seeks to overturn the political and legal system as we know it in the U.S., and it wants to create a form of radical right-wing decentralization where very little of the federal government power remains, in which there's almost no regulation of a capitalist system, and all of the levers of which we're used to correct for social inequities, for racial bias or anything, or for a safety security net are going to be removed. And the tactic they're best known for is deploying paramilitary formations. In the 90s, these were militias. The militia movement. But now we're seeing a whole bunch of different kinds of more decentralized paramilitary formations around, which is why we're seeing like armed action down at the Mosher National Wildlife Refuge.
And as you're doing your research into the Oregon Patriot Movement running for office, what offices are people from the Patriot Movement, as far as you can tell, running for?
Mostly county-level offices. They have a real fixation on the county as a political structure they want to take over. The constitutional sheriffs are almost always county sheriffs. But most of the positions they're running for in this election are county commission positions. Or county judge, which is in Crook and in Harney, the name that's essentially a chair of the county commission. So they're trying to take over county commissions. And then once they're in the county commission, they're trying to get the counties, they have the authority. There's this crank legal strategy called coordination. They claim that the counties can tell the feds what to do with the land. This isn't true, but this is a tactic they try. There are a couple people running for state senate, state rep, and some gubernatorial candidates as well.
How did you come to this issue, and what part of it do you really study?
I started monitoring neo-Nazi and crypto-fascist movements a number of years ago. We were very interested that they were trying to cross-recruit from left-wing movements and ecological movements. Through that, I ran into the Oath Keepers, who are one of the major Patriot Movement groups. They were coming to Occupy Wall Street demonstrations and trying to recruit from people at Occupy. And they were trying to do, in Southern Oregon, for example, there was a group called Panda, which was trying to unite people from Occupy Wall Street and people from the Tea Party to get county governments to oppose the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. And then what happened last year, there was a conflict in Southern Oregon in Adiskin County, a little north of Grants Pass by Marlin, Oregon, between some miners and the Bureau of Land Management. This had actually been a dispute that had been going on for a few years. But this specific case, BLM told some miners they had erected a building. They'd done some work on their claim, made structures, and the BLM said, "We think you're in violation. Here's some paperwork. You have to return it." And instead of returning the paperwork, they called their buddies in the Patriot Movement, local Oath Keepers, 3%ers, people from around the country, to come and establish armed camps to hold the BLM off. The miners claimed, at the end of the day, they really were claiming the BLM had no jurisdiction and that the miners essentially own these mining claims as if they were private property, that they could treat them as if they were private property. So this alerted some people in Oregon with the Rural Organizing Project. This really wonderful group in Oregon has 50 local groups outside of Portland in the rural and small town part of the states. They contacted the think tank I work with, PRA, and they said, "Hey, what's going on?" And we said, "Hey, you've got a lot of really crazy Patriot Movement activism there. That movement's supposed to be in decline, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, but it seems like it's in full swing in Oregon." So for the last year, for the last year, I've been looking very closely at the Patriot Movement in Oregon. I live in New York, but I spent quite a bit of time going back and forth to Oregon, traveling around the state, talking to people, and investigating the movement.
So, Spencer, the reason this Patriot movement is growing in power, that just tells me that there's something that's not working very well for local residents in rural areas. What is it that the Patriot movement organizers are able to capitalize on in recruiting people to their movement?
Well, that's absolutely right. There is real discontent in the rural areas. I think everybody knows this. The rural Oregon was always based on a mining, but a particularly logging wealth, and the rural areas were quite wealthy in the post-war period until the 70s and 80s when it started to flatline. Some of these economies, like in Harney County, which is where the Malheur Refuge is, the economy has flatlined since the 70s. Some of this does have to do with restrictions on logging on public lands, but a lot of it does not, too. Some of it has to do with changes in the international timber industry, advances in automation that make hiring large number of workers no longer necessary. So these rural areas, small town areas, they're pretty sparsely populated in Oregon, you know, outside of Eugene and Portland. People are still there. Population that moved there to engage in these extractive industries are still there, but there's not much economy there, and nothing has really replaced it. And at the same time, discontent is almost always in areas with high percentages of federal land ownership. Harney County is something like 73% federal land. Oregon's about 53% overall. The Patriot movement is popular in counties with high levels of federal land ownership. For example, in Columbia County, there's some well-established Patriot movement activists there, but they've never been able to get much popularity, and we think that's because there's a very low level of federal land ownership in that county. In my experience, they're not looking towards other ways to develop their county economies. They're completely fixated that only natural resource economies, that's the only thing that they're thinking about. And since that's off the table, the only thing they can think of is to unlock why it's off the table, which is to allow a revival of ranching, mining, and logging on the federal lands where they're now restricted from doing that, instead of developing alternatives.
We've also seen a number of reports around the United States where the suicide rate is the group that kills itself at the highest rates in the United States is white males. I've seen a number of stories in the past couple of months about how white women are drinking ourselves to death at a higher rate. And when I look at what's happening in Oregon in the rural areas and this political organizing among conservative people with conservative values, I can see why the timber wars, the resolution of the timber wars back in the late 80s, early 90s, where some of these natural resources, the extractive industries, became locked up into federal ownership. I can imagine that that actually really supercharges the political anger that the organizers are using.
A lot of white working class people. The world is changing. Economies are changing. The U.S. is changing. The demographic of the U.S. is changing. You don't see it so much in Oregon, but it's really just part of the U.S. that's majority white left in the center and northern part of the U.S. Most of the rest of the U.S., I think, at this juncture, I'm not quite sure that in the South is even changing very rapidly. It's not a country that their parents or grandparents lived in, and they're not, people don't have an expectation, even if they're doing better, even if white people are doing better than other racial groups in the U.S., and as a group, better, even working-class white people than Latinos or Blacks or Native Americans or other groups, the expectation of the level that they would be able to achieve in their life, but economically, is declining. And so it's a relative thing, and I think that's what's really pushing the suicide rate. That they had certain expectations of what their life would be like, and that's not going to happen economically, and the country they grew up in is changing. I mean, we're becoming a different country. The right wing in the rural areas, the powers that be, have always blamed environmentalists on putting restrictions on logging on public land, and that is part, but I don't even think that's, I'm not an economist, so I couldn't say, but it's certainly not the only part, and it might even be just a small part of the decline of the logging industry. Some of it has to do with technological changes. I was in Cottage Grove, and my friend was like, oh, look, there's a mill. And I'm like, there's a mill in Cottage Grove? And she's like, yeah, but it only employs 4 people. Even if you brought logging back, it would never, even if we logged every last tree in Oregon, it would never return all these jobs here. Those jobs don't exist. And in some cases, it's because of foreign ownership and other changing structures. It's an easy thing to blame federal environmental laws for all these problems. They're not the cause of all the environmental problems in Oregon. And in many cases, locking, you know, quote, locking these lands up brings in a lot of tourism dollars. It brings in federal employees who get paid from the federal till, so they're getting benefits and salaries that are all not coming from the local economy. Feds are paying for the roads. So there's a lot of federal subsidies that actually come in with these things, too, but the Patriot Movement just ignores that. They pretend a lot of wealth will be produced in rural areas if we could just log the federal forests without restrictions. But in their calculations, they completely ignore what's going to happen when all the federal employees go away and all the money they bring in and all the tourism dollars that come in because of them.
Yeah, I think we saw that with some of the rhetoric that came from the takeover of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge. I wonder, as we watch what's happening politically around the United States, the whole world is watching what's going on in this country. And so on the left, people are trying to sort of break out of what they consider to be everyday party politics by perhaps supporting Bernie Sanders instead of Hillary Clinton. And on the right, people seem to be doing the same thing, except they're reaching for Donald Trump over Ted Cruz or whomever else might be there. What does that mean? What is your sense of what this disenfranchisement of white conservative people in the Oregon rural areas and the rise of the Patriot Movement, what is that saying about our electoral politics?
The Republican Party seems like it's about to crack in half. The old alliance between the Christian right and the business conservatives that went on for decades is being, it seems like it's been hit by the Tea Party, by Sarah Palin and the Tea Party. And it's going in a tailspin, and now at least half or more of it is this sort of conspiracy, driven by conspiracy theories. It's driven by this demonization of immigrants and demonization of Muslims. All this kind of paranoid rhetoric is now mainstream. Things that even 2 or 3 years ago you couldn't say in public, or no reputable person would say in public, Donald Trump is saying. And so the Patriot Movement is happening in that context. I think they're all more part of the same context. Clearly Trump's popularity is making the claims, the political rhetoric of the Patriot Movement sound a lot more mainstream than it would have even sounded 2 years ago.
Why is this a big deal? How is the wider country impacted by the growth of this Patriot Movement? I mean, and you had just said resorting to armed takeovers, but I'd love to hear what your big take is on that.
It's dangerous because they're armed and they totally believe that they have the right. They're using the language of the traditional American political and legal system, even though their views, I think, are outside of that. And they think they have the right to enforce those views with paramilitary action. And they're not afraid to stick a gun in people's face to do that. They want to settle up whatever differences I have with Americans and our political system. I do appreciate that we try to settle our differences without resorting to armed action. We don't go and assassinate each other's political leaders like happens in Lebanon or Iraq or something. We don't disagree with somebody. We keep it fairly civil on that level. And these people think that they can, even if their views are similar to a lot of other Republicans, that they can settle their political disagreements with guns. And these armed takeovers, because the one in Malheur, there was one before in Oregon and Josephine County. There was one at a mine in Montana. And then there was the big, you know, armed standoff with Clive and Bundy a couple of years ago down south, I believe in Nevada. I always forget it was right on the border. But there's a lot of other armed actions, too. There are Oath Keepers are holding one of the big Patriot Movement groups are hold armed marches. There's this wave that have these open carry marches, which, I mean, they're legal. Usually we don't have armed politics in the U.S., and this is pushing armed politics. People are holding armed marches outside of mosques because they are religious bigots and they hate Muslims and they demonize Muslims in the same way that, you know, German Nazis demonized Jews in the 30s. So there's a lot of armed action going on in the United States today. Some of these groups, their rhetoric is incendiary and they're all armed to the teeth. People like the Three Percenters, and they're saying if there's new gun restrictions are passed, they're gonna resist with armed resistance. We had in Oregon, y'all had a state senator and two state representatives appear on stage with the founder of the Three Percenters, Mike Vanderbilt, who called on stage for there to be an armed civil war against Governor Brown and the current state government, while other state reps and state senators were there, you know, who had just shared the stage with him. It's worrisome that there's tens of thousands of people in this movement who seem like they're getting ready for armed conflict and who most or many of whom possess, you know, firearms already.
Should we be embracing the people that live in the rural areas, or should we be afraid? What is your take on it? You've been doing a lot of thinking about this and these dynamics. What should we do to fix the situation?
So I wish I had an easy answer for you. I can tell you we need to recognize, I agree that our state officials and our federal officials have abandoned people in rural areas. Like, that's just the truth, and they don't care, and this is causing a lot of pain, and we, you know, even those of us urban lefties or whatever, I'm here in New York City, need to recognize the reality of the howls of pain that are existing in rural areas, and that the crisis is real, and that they're not, it's not made up that there's a problem, and people are looking for solutions to it. I think people need to, even while we recognize that the solutions that people who join the Patriot Movement are the wrong solutions, and these are bad answers and even not answers at all, that their solutions won't turn out to be real solutions either. People need to educate themselves a little bit about this movement, find out about what its actual politics are, try to offer alternatives where people can. You know, I think the World Organizing Project is definitely looking for concrete alternatives we can give to some of these communities.
Spencer Sunshine, Political Research Associates. Tell us one more time where we can read more of your work.
It's available on PRA's blog, which is politicalresearch.org, or you can see all my articles on my own website. It's spencersunshine.com.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:59. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is the proud co-sponsor of the World Beat PDX monthly series featuring Wamba on Thursday, May 12th at the Analog Cafe in Portland. Wamba plays percussive jazz and funk with a strong world beat influence and will be playing two sets that evening. Again, that's Wamba on Thursday, May 12th at the Analog Cafe, 720 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Pan-African Film Series. This month, May 18th at 6 p.m., will be A Message from Women in Gambia at the Smith Student Union at Portland State University. A Message from the Women of Gambia will feature young women organizers from the All-African Women's Revolutionary Union and the All-African People's Revolutionary Party speaking about organizing for Pan-Africanism in Gambia and throughout Africa. Again, that's a message from the Women of Gambia, a part of the Pan-African Film Festival, Wednesday, May 18th at 6 p.m. at the Smith Student Union, Room 333 at PSU, 1826 Southwest.